stuck on an ice planet that isn't Hoth. This is the Bennett Brothers podcast for The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 2, Chapter 10. I got it right. I'm Jerry Bennett.
I'm Joel Bennett, and we're all surprised you got it right.
I know.
Thank you for joining us again as we delve into the second season of Mandalorian on Disney Plus. We're going to talk about it and spoil the heck out of it, and chapter 10.
No, episode title.
Yeah, chapter 10.
The Passenger.
Oh, is it called The Passenger?
Yeah.
Oh, for some reason, I didn't write that down.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so we're not going to give you all the Easter eggs, just some of them, like the title of the show. So if you...
Is this the show that stars Boba Fett?
Who's Boba Fett?
Oh, no.
Oh, man. Yeah, but we're going to talk about this episode, and we're going to get right into it like we did last time. So, Jerry, what are your initial thoughts?
This episode, which was 39 minutes, I believe, or give or take with credits and everything, was obviously less. It's hard to live up to last week's episode, which was grandiose and longer. This felt like an in-between episode. This is not bad as far as the episode. I enjoyed it thoroughly. Debbie loved it. It was just action and everything. But it did feel filler. Because it's hard to say. Maybe this will all have relevance because it's all part of one long story. And that kind of happened in the first season, too. It's like you had the Jawas episode where he goes off and he steals, the egg and that whole sequence. But it was a great episode. But did it was part of the journey. And that's fine. And I guess we should accept that, versus not each episode has to be, The Force Awakens. Major storyline moving forward. So I liked it, not as much as last week's, but I liked it. You?
I enjoyed it. I think you also mentioned last week that it didn't move the story forward.
I did. It did, but last week was so big. And it's also the first episode, and I felt it was like, okay. And then the moving and the story forward is obviously that Boba Fett's alive. So that's what the moving.
Do you think your enjoyment or your level of how much you like the episode changes based on if it's moving the main story forward?
I have to be aware of that, and I am. And I don't want to say the only good episodes are the ones that move it forward. And I have read up reviews online where people are like, oh, it didn't do that. It's like, yeah, but it's still a great episode just because you want, this episode now to tie in so that, Jar Jar shows back up because it moves it forward. Well, that doesn't happen. But I also understand it too because we like to see. I'm a serial storyteller kind of guy. I don't like one and dones as much, and so I like to see it going forward. So that I'm balancing the fact that I want to see a bigger picture moving forward. I love reveals just like everybody else. You're like, oh my gosh, what's that?
You'd be happy with the Jar Jar Binks showing up?
No.
Is that what I'm understanding? Is that what you're looking forward to?
Misa hate that.
No, I rather enjoyed this episode. Yeah, I don't think it was... I mean, could it be length? I don't know. But obviously the first episode was pretty spectacular. But this one is amazing. And the tie into the Star Wars franchise is amazing. And I don't know. I just thought this was great. I don't think there's an episode where Baby Yoda is any more adorable than this episode. My God. When it cries out, Jesus. No, it's really well done. And again, we don't know until later in the season how much this is going to move the story forward. We don't know if the Passenger is going to be a character that's going to be around longer. It's because the way they end it just ends this little chapter in this destination saga. So it's very Lord of the Rings fellowship in the sense that you move from plot point to plot point or adventure to adventure. First you're on the mountain, then you're on the grass, then you're and you just deal with things along the way. It's an adventure.
Yeah. Some of the negative that I've read about it, and it's really people's really weird feelings, but they're genuine feelings. You're in this episode and you're with the Mandalorian and you want him on his adventure. And his adventure in this episode is to get from point A to point B and get this person and her eggs, her precious cargo. Otherwise, we're told several times this will be the end of their line. So we're invested in he wants to complete this mission
to get the Mandalorian.
And then plus also that this is what he's chosen to do, and it's a mother with her young or offspring, so we're following that. And then the child is obviously eating them as we go, which is played for laughs. And it is funny, but there is also this, it kind of plays against the side where we're like, well, wait a minute, isn't he supposed to be doing that? And are we supposed to be worrying about this? So I read online, people have issues like, oh, how could this happen? Because now we're feeling like he should be doing, should be helping, and now he's actually working against him. And I will say that I felt a little bit that in the moment during the first time I watched the episode. There was those moments of like, oh, stop him from eating it. Stop, grab it from him. And I did feel myself doing that a little bit. But ultimately, that's not really that important.
Sure, sure.
But I can see the feelings.
I picture, Dave Filoni and Peyton Reed, who directed this episode. They're like laughing hysterically as the baby eats the eggs every time.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a sense of humor that if it's not funny to you, then you're gonna have that negative impact. If you find it funny, then you're going to enjoy it. And it's subjective, so that's okay.
Joel mentioned, obviously, the director of the episode is Peyton Reed, and we'll talk a little farther about that when we get into the episode. But just to get it out of the way, Peyton Reed was the director of Ant-Man and also Ant-Man and the Wasp. So he's got a pedigree. He's tied into Disney through the Marvel, and that's the connection.
And he works with bugs. So there you go. So this episode is going to start right where we left off, or fairly shortly after we left off from the previous episode. And we find that
he's heading back to Mos Eisley.
When the Dune Sea, he's bringing some meat with him. But he gets there's some raiders along the way who try to pull what I like to call the Ewok trap, and that is to string a wire across a speeder bike and knock him off there. Luckily, he doesn't.
I liked his landing. Using the
landing was awesome. He doesn't get the wire across his body speed trooper or the stormtrooper who is on the speeder bike. They are called scout troopers. There we go.
I'm not gonna say anything. I wanted you to redeem yourself.
We have a really nice fight scene here. We'll get into it in a second here.
We also know that these are people who are after the child, because one of them actually says, get the child.
Yes.
So this wasn't just a randomness to get whatever they could.
I'm going to break it down a little bit. One of the thugs is...
Break it down.
Kajain Sanikito. There's two other ones that are like humanoid. Interesting fact about one of them is wearing... rebel armor, kind of, and has a Hoth signal insignia on his shoulder. What's that all about? We don't know. And then we have the short alien who wears a mask and has the same sort of costume as who, Jerry?
Oh, no. Now you made me remember what it was.
Scrapjaw Mojito. And this is not the first time we're... Well, now this might not... This is probably not the same alien.
No, it's the same. It's the same race. Saw this with Rey on the planet Jakku.
Or it might not be the same race. I've read places that speculate, could this be a Jawa wearing that? And by the way, Scrap Jawa. I'm just throwing... There's been Utani. People throwing out there. But yeah, it's from Force Awakens. This was a creature who urged Rey to scrub or salvage goods faster on Jakku.
As one does.
Yes, as one does. I want to point this out. I found this interesting bit of news out. I watched this YouTube channel, Corridor Crew, and the last episode they have, which is they watch stuff with stunt people, and the stunt woman they have on there, I've totally not write down her name, she does a lot of the stunts. She did a stunt for Elektra in Daredevil. She did the stunts for first season of Mandalorian. She was the armorer. And do you remember that fight with the armorer?
Yes.
And where she's fighting all these stormtroopers?
Yes.
I found this interesting. So that was actually, and the reason I'm bringing it up because of the fight scene here, and the fight scene was pretty good.
Also,
the reason I'm bringing it up, though, real quick, is that fight scene was directed by Dave Filoni kind of as a second unit. And it was a one take or one shot where they did the whole fight scene all the way through as opposed to just shooting certain segments. They did the whole fight scene all the way through. They shot it in one day. Guess how many times they ran that fight scene?
I don't know.
400 times.
Jesus, come on.
I know.
Wasn't that good?
They wanted to get all these different shots and different angles and all sorts of stuff. I was blown away by that number.
That tells you that they don't have to worry about resetting lights and everything else. It's like it's just ready to go. It's fast.
Yeah, I mean,
filming.
The volume is what they shoot on. That's what it's called. Yeah.
We've talked about
it. They can move everything so quickly. But actually, that was a practical set, so they actually built that set for that.
Also, one of the local restaurants we have, they have a drink called the Scrap Jar Mojito, and it's delicious.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And then we have the end of the fight scene has a great use of the jetpack. I thought it was funny that when he goes to give the jetpack, he puts it down, and it stays standing up. And I'm like, wow, look at the balance on that jetpack. When the jetpack returns and then lands and then falls over, for some reason, that tickled me. I thought that was, I'm like, oh, they're paying attention to the balance of the jetpack too. But I thought it was a brilliant use of the jetpack. It was funny. It was very funny. I wrote down here, the puppet is extra adorable this episode. And it is numerous times. So he's gonna huff it back to Moss. What was the name of the port?
Mos Eisley.
No, he's not going to Mos Eisley.
He is going to Mos Eisley.
Is he going to Mos Eisley?
He's not going to Mos Espa.
You're right, Mos Espa.
Because this is the same place that has the original tattoo.
Not Mos Pelgo, yes.
That's right. That's where he's coming from.
Mm-hmm. So he helps it back on foot. And so we enter the cantina at Mos Eisley.
We go to the
home
same
of Scum and Villainy.
Yeah, we go to the same cantina booth where Han and Greedo decided who would shoot first.
We do see a Gagorin. In this episode, it's the furry creature which we've seen in Star Wars Rogue One and in Star Wars Solo, and then we get to see Peli again, and
Peli
she's playing Sabacc against the Honorable Dr. Mandible,
a member of the Kalilic race.
He was also a I was Kalilic looking at his IMD. He was also in Honey I Shrunk the Kids. So. And he also.
Well, this is also this is the inside joke for Peyton Reed, who directed Ant-Man.
Yeah, he was also in Ant-Man and the Wasp. He's playing the drums at the end.
It's a different one.
No, this is the same ant. It's crazy, Dr. Mandible.
Yes, interesting fact. I'm sure you probably had this in there, but this is not the first time we're seeing Dr. Mandible. He was in season one when we were at the same
or the
cantina
coming up here.
Exactly, and the passenger was also there. So it's kind of designed. I mean, obviously, the practical reason is they could just have been like those particular costumes and puppets, and so they decided to build a story around them. But within context of the universe, you can say that that's how Dr. Mandible keeps his ears or his antenna up to get all the information.
Jerry, what did Dr. Mandible get his degree in?
I don't know. That name to me, when she said it, it made it sound more like it was just being sarcastic. But check out Dr. Mandible over here, and check out that guy over there, Dr. Really handsy, you know. It's just I didn't think it was a real name. I mean, it seems too much.
All of his race has like different ant titles or something. Here's Dr. Antenna.
That's the only one you know.
Here's Dr. Arthropod.
And that's my ant colony.
That's terrible.
It's so terrible, you laugh.
Yeah, it's great. So she leads Din. Remember, that's our Mando's name is Din, if you've forgotten about that.
Din Djarin.
Yeah, she leads Din back to her hangar, which we've been, and we get to see a WED-15 treadwheel droid. And I remember that droid specifically from Star Tours, more than anything.
Remember seeing him first inside the Jawa Sandcrawler, when C-3PO is waking up and you see it.
He's roasting the dragon meat, the crate dragon meat, on a pod racer engine. I was reading somewhere that this is also in the Star Wars land, that they actually refer to this in one of the restaurants, that they have a pod racer up, but they don't actually do it. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. We didn't mention also the reason that the motto, she won that game of Sabacc by playing the Idiot's Array, which is what Han Solo had actually done against Lando when he won the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, nice.
And nerdy.
I like this moment here. So they're going to have a passenger come on here onto the Razor Crest who has understanding of where more Mandalorians are. So that's how this all connects here. And I like this moment here where Peli's like, I totally vouched for this passenger on my life.
I just met him 5 minutes ago. Yeah,
it was great. Great.
Who voices the frog lady?
The frog species. Is voiced by the guy who does the voice of Roger on, I believe, right?
I don't know about that. It's Dee Bradley Baker who does all the clone voices in Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah, and
Dee
Bradley Baker also does the voice of Roger on...
Roger.
That was pretty good. Jerry's favorite character on American Dad.
Stan.
I'm impressed. D. Bradley Baker, yep. He does the voice of the Frog Lady. Frog Lady, interesting enough, I didn't double check this fact. I only saw it in one place, and I'm going to go with it. The species is based on Gribbit the Ribbit, bounty hunter, which this is the first time we've seen him live, but it was taken from a Star Wars newspaper comic strip in 1981.
That's very likely. Could have been.
I know, but that's like, I don't know if that's 100% true, but like, what an obscure, these, Dave Filoni is
They put stuff around. They go like, hey, we can actually bring this back into canon somewhere.
But like from a comic strip. It's not even like from like a comic.
It will not mean anything until they bring back the giant green rabbit from Star Wars comic book.
Oh, yeah, right?
Issue 7.
That'd be awesome.
I've got that issue. It's like, you want to see that rabbit show up. It's Jason or something like that. Some weird name. Yeah.
I enjoy the linguistic portion here where we find out like the passenger, as I will refer to.
Does she speak Huttese?
Huttese? No, not none of the basic Galactic that everyone speaks, which ironically,
which killed me.
English.
Like, why would she? And the other thing is like, if you don't communicate, because clearly she can't communicate. Clearly she can understand basic. She should have a device with her. You know, now they don't really use paper in the Star Wars universe, but you could have like a little board that you could be, you know, something speaking into. Obviously, that comes into play a little bit later in this episode.
She doesn't have the money to afford an iPad, Jerry.
Yes. No. That's it.
So he's going to take this passenger on with the egg. So we go to the Razor Crest.
Yeah, I want to mention though that the puppetry on this thing is fantastic, and it also makes me wonder how much of that is CGI enhanced.
How much of it and how much of it is actually just full CG? I think anytime it's held by someone and whatnot, that is a puppet.
I'm not talking anytime about the actual walking, puppet. I'm not talking about the child.
I'm talking about the frog.
Facial expressions. Now, later in the episode, when she's hopping around, that's CG.
Yes.
And there's obviously a puppet there that's using that, but I'm wondering if they, you know, how like they take
person
masks.
In the mask with the animatronics going on.
Yeah, there's animatronics masks, but sometimes they enhance those animatronics and speed them up a little bit, lip movement up a little bit through CG, and it's so subtle. But it's just phenomenal. Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to get into that in the behind the scenes a little bit, maybe.
We'll know in 3
so
months.
So we find out on the Razor Crest that the baby really enjoys eating these eggs, like it enjoys eating everything else. I will say, though, the eating of the eggs doesn't look right.
Because it just slurps in like a Jell-O shot.
Well, it almost like disappears. It just, poop, it's gone. Like,
well, because you're not seeing its mouth open that big, but that yeah, you can look at him being gelatinous.
I think that egg is a CG egg.
Could
that
be.
That's the way they made it look.
Well, here's the interesting. When Yoda, when the child first sees that, and Jason picked up on this, my son, he's like, there's a different musical cue here. And then he goes, is that Baby Yoda's music? And then at that same time, the camera, like you see the eggs, and then they do this camera zoom up to the child, and it's very Spielbergian.
Yes.
And it's, it's that was like, wow, this is cinematic. Which also, before I forget, is we still are seeing wipes, and I guess we were seeing them in the first season. It usually has to do, like in Star Wars, in the movies, the wipes are used for a transition of time or transition of a different location where a different part of the story is going on. And this show does do it when you go to the space and whatnot. So there are the wipe transitions. We were questioning it, but yes, I did notice that it's
well, it's because it stood out so much to us. Maybe it's because we haven't seen it.
Or
in
we
a
just
while.
Didn't. Maybe we commented on it. It's been a year since the last series.
I don't remember. We talked about so many other TV shows since then. On the way, the Razor Crest is stopped by, or I don't know, they're not stopped, but they're confronted by two X-wing pilots.
Two cops.
Two X-wings.
Pull over.
In regular form condition, not with their S-wings in attack position. And we have a nice little confrontation here, very reminiscent of Han Solo doing his bit in the prison cell, the prison ward. How are you doing up there? Like, it was very that kind of, everything's good, everything's fine. Yeah. Remind me of that. And then we get a nice moment where, I don't think this has ever been done before, but may the force be with you.
And also with you. Yeah, that was...
It's fantastic.
Now, people have questioned, like, obviously... The Mandalorian doesn't really have a lot of knowledge in the Jedi and the Force, because in the first season he's talking about this thing's using magic, this creature and its people, and it doesn't really know about that. So people speculate that the may the Force be with you is more something that he knows that rebels say Mm-hmm. Not necessarily what it really means.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. And but it's just nice to have "and also with you." I mean, we've been saying that for decades. It's great. Yes. Everyone's been saying it forever.
Now, the two X-Wing pilots here, obviously, one of them we've seen already, which is, as Joel mentioned, Dave Filoni actually returns as playing the pilot known as Trapper Wolf. I didn't even know these names until this episode, but he was in the previous season's episode when the three X-Wings came to the prison ship. And then the other pilot is a new addition. It is Captain Carson Teva, played by Paul Sung-hoon Lee.
Look at Jerry pulling out the actors. I usually do that.
I can't believe I pronounced Paul correctly. I'm very impressed with that.
Welcome to my nightmare, by the way. So the X-Wings, they're doing this back and forth, and then they realize, like, they've got to take this, they take the Razor Crest in, and they go to attack position with the S-Foils, which is awesome. And then we have a great little chase sequence here. I really enjoyed it. It's very it's super well done.
What the hell,
super
that whole thing goes, hey, can we switch to channel 2? I was like, if I was the Mandalorian, I'm like, switch to channel 2 also. But just that back and forth, you're waiting, and all of a sudden then the X-Foils, you know, open up.
Yeah.
Oh, really well done.
So we go to the planet now. What planet is this, Jerry? Do you know?
I don't have it in front of me.
The planet is Maldo Crease.
That's what I meant to say.
And we've found that out because some people online were able to translate the Arab, the whatever the writing
is. The Star Wars alphabet. Yeah,
and determined that this is the planet we're on. And wonderful. This is where Mandalorian Episode 1 starts out. This is the same planet. You know, when the ship falls through the ice and all that, and they have the ice creatures, this is that planet. So he's already... from the first episode. And so he's already familiar with this planet a little bit. You got to remember, so the reason why we're seeing Trapper Wolf again, all this stuff, all the Mandalorian, where we've been, has been taking place in sort of what they call the same sector, right? Or a couple sectors over. Like, this is kind of the same area. Is Tatooine, and you're not
going far. The outer rim.
But it's like even the same area as that. That's why we're getting some of the repeat locations and the repeat characters.
Yeah, well, we talked about last week, the fact that the Tatooine is all of a sudden the center of the world, even though it's not supposed to be. But also, I don't know if I read this, and I had to find this someplace else. The actor, we were talking about the Paul son, the helmet he's wearing was Biggs's helmet.
Really?
That's what he said in an interview.
That's a cool nod. I mean, it doesn't make any sense in the canon, but it's
Sense because Lucasfilm goes, hey, we have a helmet sitting here. Why would we make another one? Mm-hmm. This one's screen ready to go. I mean, they probably slap a new coat of paint on it and go. And yeah. I'm sure it was probably used in Jedi. You know, somebody had worn it in Jedi.
This show is so interesting, like, because it looks so big budget, but it's really like scrapping together all the props and costumes.
It's that were
created
efficient.
During movies when they have huge budgets. And it was really doing a wonderful job of making this look great, which, you know, I'm hopeful for the Marvel TV shows to look at that level, at this level. Are they grabbing all their stuff, scrounging all their stuff from the movies that were made to keep the budget level looking very high, the production value level very high? Are they using the volume? I'm assuming I don't know if the Marvel movies are going to be using the volume.
I think everybody is. Hey, do we establish why he's traveling at sublight speed and not hyperdrive?
We did not establish that, but go ahead and say why.
Well, my question is we're told that they can't because it would kill the eggs, but we don't know why. We just are supposed to be told that.
Midichlorians, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Well, the eggs have got to be brought over to be fertilized. Hopefully we'll get to see that, how the eggs are fertilized. That'll be pretty hot.
All right, so they end up crashing further through the ice.
Had a Independence Day feel for me in the valley there. And
nice.
Sliding around.
Nice. And then there's a big hole. There's a big hole in the hull after the crash, and we see the baby eating more eggs. And then he sees the hole.
Oh, that scene when they were dropping and they cut to the frog lady's face. She's like, ah! It was it was like a Muppet show for me at that point. It's just like, ah! Fozzie, like, ah!
You see the arms flailing in the air like Kermit. So they crash. So Mando, Din, he gets woken up to the alarms, right? And that's where he sees the X-Wing pilots. And then they do this chase, and then they crash. He sees the hole in the ship, and then he's like, "And I'm still tired. I'm going to go to sleep now and wait for things to come back." And
okay,
I'm like, you I crashed.
I called that out here. I was like, it's like, what is Mando's plan here? And I wrote down, the nap seems strange. And I listened to him the second time. He's like, his wording is, it's going to get worse at night. I'm going to wait till then to better assess the situation, is what he says, paraphrasing. Which is silly.
Tired.
I understand that. But at the same time, it's like, when he actually goes and starts doing it, he clearly fixes the damn thing. So it's just, it's strange. Yeah.
Well, we see him from previous episode. He's been awake through the Krayt Dragon, and then he's on the speeder bike. The suns are rising or setting. And then he goes, and then that's when he starts this episode. So he's had no time to sleep.
Well, we don't know that. You're again, as we talked about, this show isn't going to waste time with that. That trek across the Dune Sea could have taken a day, and he could have, you know, camped out like in when he camped in the first episode with the, you know, he went to camp with the sand people, and that first time we see them in there. So that could have happened, or he could have been.
I'm just
going
to assume he's really tired from his trek. He's walking across.
He's
the
so tired
Sea
he's not going to take that helmet off when he goes to sleep, which is crazy.
So the passenger uses the droid that's there, Zero.
Yes. Once again, voiced by Richard Ayoade.
Ayoade.
Okay.
Yeah, so they get him to do the voice again, so this is the way they can communicate. Clever. Very clever. I liked it.
I was wondering why in the previously on they had shown us that scene.
Yes.
It's almost a spoiler when you start seeing, like, previously on, you're like, oh, well, I guess this is happening in this episode again.
On the surface, so Mando walks out and starts to repair the Razor Crest. And then he...
Which seems like a lost cause.
Yeah. He is... The baby comes out, and they find out that the passenger has walked away.
Yeah, that was the first time I've seen the actual child do something to, like, pointing out something to him versus just experiencing it. He's like, pointing, like, hey, over here, look this way. I thought, okay. There's because his communication didn't seem like he added much to the conversation. He was just doing his journey and just basically saying no or doing that. So,
So he uses his visor to see the footprints, which is very
thermal,
which is very video game esque, like to see where someone goes. And I think they do a good job here of like how long. Like he doesn't have to travel super long, but he has to travel long enough because he's going to make this trek back, and that trek has to be action packed. So they do a good job.
He goes
like
to the ice pond where Jon Snow was hanging out with. Egret or whatever.
So, yeah, the passenger is going for a dip in the hot tub.
That's why they had to put nudity in this episode. It was awkward. It's like, hey, don't look at the frog, naked lady.
Naked frog lady. There's a really, really funny shot here where the baby's looking at the egg and it goes to grab the egg and Mando's hand comes right into the frame. Just with the finger. And I can picture them on set just dying laughing every time that happened. And it was really funny to me. So the baby's like, if I can't eat this, I'm going to eat something else. So the baby goes over to the facehuggers, the facehugger plant, which is what it is.
Meanwhile, yeah, it's kind of an interesting musical track playing here. It's like a little journey he's going on to while they're trying to very, very slowly put each egg back into
very
the pot.
Slowly, yes. So he encounters this spider-like race. Do you have any stuff you want to...
Well, okay, here's...
What species is this?
Well, first off, there's a real big convenience in this, how every egg hatches right after this
moment. Well,
that's just
it. So I was going to ask you this question. Do you blame this adventure, this misadventure, do you blame it on the passenger for going so far away to...
Absolutely, in this part.
Or is the opening of the egg caused by the baby, is that what causes all the other eggs to hatch?
That's the only way you can interpret that, yeah. And was that one dead, or was it in hibernation?
So do you call out the passenger, or would they have gathered all the eggs and walked back like nothing happened? Or do you call out the baby
boring.
Who has to eat everything it sees?
He's a baby. He's only 50 years old, and I can speak for experience. We don't know much when we're 50.
So what is this species, Jerry?
El Spider de Bigo. No, this is based on a Ralph McQuarrie 1979 drawing for The Empire Strikes Back. This was theoretically going to be a creature that was going to be in a Hoth sequence.
Yes.
This giant spider. What is the spider called, Joel?
I didn't write the name down because I wanted you to say it.
No.
It's so funny. I didn't write the name down. This is the one creature I didn't write down. I'm like, I'm going to save this for Jerry. He's the one who's going to be able to.
Perhaps we should have had a conversation ahead of time.
Look at us not being planned out at all. the creatures are known as. I will have it here in a second.
They're not the same as the creatures we saw in the Clone Wars or Rebels cartoon, which was also based on the drawing, but slightly different looking. But they are very similar, probably in the same family, but this one is different than that.
The Krykna, K-R-Y-K-N-A. The Krykna. So there you go.
We're going to rename this podcast. Bad pronunciations.
Yes. It's close enough. So there's another adorable baby moment. This is when it kind of cries out.
It's like, hey, gotta go.
Commando. And it was like, oh, yeah. I can't even do it. But it was just like, oh, my God. Stop being adorable. And then they get chased by the spiders, as I will now call them.
They can shoot out spider webs like, yeah. Spider-Man. And everything about this was I like the fact that, like, as I'm sitting there, and you constantly see it's going, and they're just kind of sitting there watching. It's like, quick, get the things that you have to get done. So when he finally closes the egg lid, I'm like, shh, and he puts it on his shoulder. I'm like, okay, now he's got the eggs. That's done. Maybe the passenger won't make it because she's still sitting in the water. And she quickly does her CG tongue to get her clothes. And 2 seconds later, she's dressed. I'm like, I don't care how long. Just get dressed and get going. Get out of there. I'm not comfortable here. Like, these spiders are coming. And there's, you know.
Ugh. And then probably the biggest wow moment for me in this episode was when they're running and the frog creature transforms to running like a frog. I was like, what? That's awesome. I don't know why I found that to be so intriguing.
I don't know either.
And I don't know if it ran any faster in frog mode than it did on two legs, but it was really just a clever idea that, like, okay, at this point it's going to turn into an actual frog and start hopping.
You know, and he did, we did see the child eat a frog in the first season.
Yeah, right. I also felt here, as much as if we want to complain about the baby eating the eggs, right? I feel like the spider creatures have a real legit complaint. Like, imagine this is your home, and you have these babies, and then this one creature comes in and eats one of your babies. What are you going to do? You're going to attack the creatures that ate your baby. Like, Mando's actually the villain in this one. He's the bad guy. No one's complaining about that, though.
They're gross. They're creepy.
They're icky looking, so that makes them bad.
Yeah, that's universally known. Cute, good, ugly, creepy, bad.
So they get into the Razor Crest. And they have this moment where all the spiders are descending, and the one descends on top of the baby's head. And it like, it reminds me of those head massage things that you use to put on your head. I was like, oh, that must feel nice at least.
Okay, so let me ask you this. When you're watching this whole sequence here, you're like, you got to be waiting, like, okay, now they're safe. Now they're safe. And it's like, they get past the big one, and they shoot the little ones, and then it gets to the ship. Okay, well, they say, nope, they're getting into the ship. Okay, that's not working. So let's get into the cockpit. And they're coming in through the door. I'm like, oh, my God, get these things out of here. Finally gets that closed, and then they start to take off, and all of a sudden, then the big one lands on the ship when you think you're just like, okay. As soon as it lands on the ship, I'm like, how are they going to get it? And then it's like two pincers go right into the cockpit.
Which they never deal with later on, by the way.
At that point, I go, okay, how the hell is he going to get out of this? Somebody has to come and help them. And that's the only thing I can think of. There's nothing else that can happen. And then at this point, obviously what happens is the two X-Wing pilots silently come in and they help them. But I guess people online were hoping, like, oh, maybe it would be some new character reveal, Cara Dune, or, you know, anybody coming in to do that. And so I guess people were disappointed, like, oh, here's another opportunity. And I'm like, get the hell out of here.
Deus Ex Machina is what you're saying.
Yeah. But I did like when these guys come in. Yeah, it shows the difference between how the Empire would deal with it and the New Republic. It's like, even if they were coming there to arrest him, they would still try and help him there.
And they are incredible shots, too, which I thought was, like, they were shooting all of them. I was like, this is great. They are really good shots.
They're heroes of the Rebellion, yeah. So they're talking, and basically he's like, hey, am I under arrest? And the one guy's like, you should be. Because we know, you helped break this out, but then we call back to the fact that you actually caught us three villains. You sent us to the main villains. You tried to save the animated voice of Darth Vader, you know, and it was also
Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah. And then that was the actor who got killed, who was the rebel pilot on that ship in episode 7 last season. And then we also get confirmed that they confirm that the name of the ship that prison ship was, or whatever, that transport, it was the Bothan 5, which everybody knows is a reference to when Mon Mothma in Return of the Jedi says, many Bothans died to give us this information.
And five of them, actually.
So people have speculated that, oh, they probably have named a fleet of ships after Bothans because of this. And this is the Bothan 5 versus the Bothan 12. I didn't catch it the first time, but I heard it on the second time.
So they let Din go. They don't help him, But they just let him be, and they're like, get a new transponder.
He's in the middle of nowhere. It's like, hey, a little help. Also, here's the other thing I thought about this, is in reality, they're going to arrest him. What do they do in that scenario? You're under arrest. Now get in this small little cockpit with me. No, they'd have to like wait there for a week until a transport ship can show up or something. It doesn't.
That's a good point.
Logistically, they're cops on motorcycle bike. You know, it's like motorcycle cops where they're pulling up next to someone. It's like if a motorcycle cop pulls a car over, I'm going to arrest you, and now we're both going to sit here as we have to wait for something bigger to help us. And that's why motorcycle cops are not far away from where they have access to other vehicles or stations. These two, you know, pilots are flying around on that outer rim area. They must have a ship somewhere in that sector, you know, because obviously they have to go back for refueling and everything like that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like, all right, you're under arrest. Now we're all going
to
sit here
like
for a little while.
Like a B-wing to come by, because I think you can have multiple. I think
or
you can have
more
multiple,
like a U-wing, which is from Rogue One. That's a bigger one. That's actually more used as a transport.
And a B-wing can have multiple. But yeah, you're gonna need something to help you take it. That's a really clever thought. So they leave. Din's gonna repair the ship and make it flyable, but they're only gonna be able to be in the cockpit. So they need to go to the bathroom first. Use the refresher. The loo.
Privy. No, he calls privy. It privy. Yep. The loo.
The loo. Another
skip
name
to my
it.
Loo.
The water closet, I guess you can call it.
And there was a great
know,
joke
we never
here
got
when
to
they
see
were...
him. We never got to see him repair the two mandible like openings that were through the glass
well,
or whatever.
Assume,
it was.
Well, yeah, exactly. He's
I'm
got,
assuming
he's
maybe
got,
it's got a force field.
He's got material around it and everything too. And the fact that he goes, if this door gets sucked open, and he goes, I'm just kidding. If that happened, we'd all die.
and then what does he do? He falls right back asleep.
Yeah.
The dude is tired. The dude needs a nap.
We cut back to the frog lady looking at her eggs, looking at Yoda, protecting it. And then one last joke of him eating one of her children.
It's an unfertilized egg, so it's just a... Life hasn't begun yet, I guess. I don't know.
Well, when the eggs were all inside that barrel and the first time the child comes up to it, he puts his hand there, they all moved towards his hand. Do you think that was him moving them?
Yes. I think that was him using the force to move the eggs towards him. I don't think it was life in there. If those were live, well, I mean, he eats live creatures, so it's not like he's not doing that. He's done that. It'll be rough.
Again,
it'll be rough
50.
When he sees a little baby, an infant human baby, and
he tries
eats,
to take a bite out of him.
That. Like then we'll be like, whoa,
no!
That is unacceptable. Frog babies, yes. Spider babies, absolutely. Human babies, what are you doing?
There's a line.
There is a line.
All right. So then that brings us to the end of this episode. Joel, did your thoughts change at all
no,
about
I
it?
No, I still God dang, this is a good show.
Yeah. It's a solid chapter. And I think we will look at, as other episodes will theoretically move the storyline farther along on his mission, this was a fun episode to watch again, to go like, oh yeah, it's the spider one. Let's watch that one. That one's got a lot of action in it. So
yeah,
that was really good.
Will it stand out as, you know, when you look back at season one?
It'll be like the Jawas episode where he's trying to get up the Jawas and he gets zapped and then he makes friends with them and then he's got to go fight that, you know, the beast and... That was very similar, episode
it's
two
very,
there.
It's very good, but it's not like when you think of season one, like the heist episode, the prison ship episode is one of the standout
episodes. Episode one, when he's going to get the child and he meets IG 11, all that.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So, but again, I really enjoyed it, and you're watching little mini movies every time. It's fantastic. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything... Anything you want, facebook.com/BennettBrothersPodcast.
Joel, please.
At BennettBrosPod on Twitter and BennettBrothersPodcast@gmail.com. Send it. Hit us up. Go to patreon.com and write us a message. patreon.com/BennettBrothersPodcast. Write us a message there. That'd be cool. You know, whatever. We'll take it. We love it. I know Tim usually responds to us and gives us some of the stuff we've missed on the previous episode. And hi, Tim. We really appreciate that. So please keep doing that because... We like to be told we're wrong.
Well, I don't know about that.
But we do definitely appreciate that. Anything else, Jerry, you want to add? Any news? We didn't talk about any news.
No, there's word coming out that WandaVision may be January instead of December, but that's kind of rumor at this point.
And rumor has it.
They finished filming Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. They finished filming the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. they've actually, you know, so there's more. They're just banking all of these movies and TV shows. Just build it up, build it up.
So Disney Plus will be worth the money you pay.
Well,
for
not, it. No, they're still going to put all their movies out. Or at this point now, they have a completely finished Black Widow movie sitting on the shelf. They have a completely finished Eternals movie that was supposed to be out in November. That's actually been pushed farther along because they said Shang-Chi is going to come out before that. So Shang-Chi is now done filming, so production will go on forth. They've started filming Spider-Man 3 Homeschooled or whatever it's called. So there's a lot of things going on.
Not to mention, I mean, you've seen it, but New Mutants is going to eventually come to the Disney Plus.
No, it will probably go to HBO Max first, okay. Yep. Just because of existing contracts with Fox Films and everything. Well, that brings us to the end. We will be back next week talking about episode 3, chapter 11. Please contact us and tell us what you think of this episode or thoughts on the next one or anything excited, and we will put you in the podcast, make you world famous. And by world, 17 other people will know you.
Pluto?
Yes. This is awesome. All right, guys. I'm Jerry.
I'm Joel. We'll talk to you next time.